Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
Safety professionals come into situations and usually have to work their way up to earn the respect and earn the trust and to be able to help guide. And we have an example of that today.
It's our pleasure to introduce to everybody watching the show, Sandra Merritt. Welcome.
Thank you.
We are thrilled to have you here today to talk about EHS safety, Dale Carnegie, and any other possible thing that pops into our mind from Sasquatch to the Earth. So you get ready.
I'm ready.
All right.
We always find it really interesting for folks to let us know what we would call their safety origin. There's something about how did people get involved and interested in safety? I mean, when you were a little kid, like in second grade, and they came to you and said, what do you want to be when you get big? Is that what you said?
No.
Okay. What did you want to be when you were little?
I was going to save the whales.
Oh, yeah. So when did you transition from saving the whales to help looking out for people? How'd you get into it?
Okay. So I'm an accidental safety professional. So I went to school for environmental management and was doing environmental compliance in a manufacturing facility. And about 2 years into that job, we had a fatality at that facility.
Oh, no.
All hands on deck. And so I took my environmental hat off and put a safety hat on, and it changed everything for me. And so I then started to pursue the safety side of things, and I've never looked back.
Now, without going into great depth, what happened to that individual?
That individual was working third shift. They were a tool and die maker watching the die that they had just worked on, making sure that it was operating appropriately. And while they were watching that, a fork truck operator backed into them, and they severed their femoral artery, and they bled to death. They were a single father of a four-year-old little girl. I attended the funeral, so it was very, very impactful. Very impactful.
And what part of your career did that happen? Like right out of school, right? Was that early, mid? Like
I was 5 years into my career,
and that happened.
Yes.
Wow.
What does that do to the environment in the workplace for people? They come back to work the next day, the next week, the other people. What was going on there among the folks?
You know, what was most interesting was we had just celebrated 10 million hours without a lost time accident. Mm. And it resets you, and you realize numbers don't really matter.
Well, they don't guarantee.
Exactly. And it reset everything. The morale in the facility was down. And you realize people can pass away from the work that you're doing, even when it's not a high-risk job.
Yeah.
And so it was impactful.
So you were in the middle of other things of environmental. That happened. You're helping out to take care of details of it. You go to the funeral. What happens after that?
So I reached out to my manager, and I said, I'd like to start to go down another path. Can I shadow our safety engineer? Can I shadow our IH? And can I start to get experience there? And after about 3 years then of that experience, I left that company and took on a health and safety role at a different company.
Mm. Mm. And what were the things that you just saw different from what you'd been doing before and now in the shadowing role? What kind of differences did you see that caught your attention?
From a health and safety perspective, you know, environmental is so black and white to me, right? There's rules and regulations that you follow, very cut and dry. Hazardous waste, you check the boxes, wastewater. But for safety, there's a lot of interpretation and people, dealing with people and the personalities. And so working with that and interacting with people and understanding how people interpret rules and regulations, that was very interesting. And that on that side.
Did that experience that you were taking with you make you more demonstrative or more intense with how you approach safety, or were you able to disassociate a little bit and lead in a way that was probably less compliance, maybe more people? Because I would think of myself, if I experienced that, I would be right all in, hey, we're going to do, I might take a harder approach with the experience you have or have you come that you're bringing with you. How did that impact you and what you were doing at that next company? I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. I think at that early point, when I first started in safety, I was very much compliance driven, very much.
We all were, right?
We're going to do this because, you know, I did the investigation and these were the issues that led to that. And so I'm going to make sure that we follow to a T. And if I see any issues, I'm going to address them. And it was very much, I was very hardcore, I would say.
And how did people respond to that?
Not well.
Well, thanks for being open with it.
That's a great lead in.
Yeah.
And then what changed? Then what? you
have to soften your approach, right? I always call it a safety cop, right? Nobody likes a safety cop. When you walk up and you immediately want to address what's wrong, what they're doing wrong, why they're wrong, and call them out on, you know, something.
Yeah. And could we just delve into that just a tad? Because thanks for being honest and transparent, because a lot of people listen to, yep, that's where I've been at or where I'm at right now. How did you start to take a step? Did you still do it while you were working under that person? Or how did you start to take a step? Say, maybe I need to try something different. What'd you do?
One of the things that I realized, so I came into the new role at a different facility, and one of the things I realized was that there were a lot of injuries, things were happening. And so I'm walking in and I'm looking at what's going on. And so I start to just, again, from a compliance standpoint, start to address all kinds of issues. And it wasn't being well received. And so I then kind of took a step back and realized, okay, where are the injuries coming from? Like from a people perspective, because there were a lot of lost time injuries and people were coming back on light duty and doing different things. And I realized that there were particular stations that people were working at that were causing injuries, that were leading them to have surgery. And so I worked with engineers and I worked with them to try to identify opportunities to improve the processes. And so we would present to management. And the next thing I know, I have employees coming to me saying, well, this is the first time anybody's ever looked at this job. I really appreciate you taking the time. It would be great if we could improve this process. I appreciate you looking at it. And so all of a sudden I'm getting feedback and they're really engaged and they appreciate it. And so having that conversation with them, I realized, okay, I need to engage the people more. I need to be more engaging with them. And it started to shift how I approached that job.
Now, wasn't that an interesting thing that because she didn't go straight to them, she saw trends, and Sandra then went to the engineering team, said, what can we do? And I'm sure they came out there and are working around those areas, and the people said, I'm just imagining this. Oh, why are you here? What are you doing? I said, well, you know, Sandra said we might need to take a look at this. How much different, Jay, was that approach of going it like that rather than just say, y'all straighten up and get yourself together?
Well, that was the approach I would have taken in younger part of my career for sure. I think a lot of us have. And if you're listening to the podcast and you've heard Sandra talk right now and you've heard some others, that sort of knowledge and influence and approaching things from a systemic perspective versus rules and compliance. Now you're talking people and leadership and other groups that you need to survive as an EHS professional. Man, take that advice right here and now.
And it really goes back to a Carnegie principle of talk in terms of the other person's interest. So now you're looking at their interest and what could be done to help them. And you're not just talking to them. You're talking about people who can make things done. And how did your upper management leadership respond to that when you said, we need to make these adjustments.
It was a little bit wishy-washy, right? Because depending on what the adjustments needed to be, some of it was expensive. So, you know, putting an investment into that at some times where it was a little pricey, but they were receptive eventually. But it's all about making, again, some concessions, right? Just because you pitch something and say, I need this, they might not say, okay, the first time around. You might have to go back to the drawing board, make some adjustments, and go from there.
You mean they don't listen to you the first time around?
Nope.
You believe that?
There is something that I have heard, though, about other situations, not necessarily about safety in organizations. But one of the things that higher level people are often taught is to immediately say no. And sometimes I think, Sandra, one of the reasons is they want to know if you really mean it and believe in it, or if it's just a passing fad. And how you showed it wasn't a passing fad because you went back to the drawing board, you went back and revamped. Some people have even talked about the importance of sales skills in safety leaders. You ever thought about that before?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about if folks are hearing this idea and saying, oh, I'd like to know more. What's the sales technique that you've learned that helped you to get your ideas adopted?
One of the biggest that I've used is, especially when it comes to injuries and identifying an opportunity to improve, is when you find an opportunity and you want to implement something new, if you can take it back and you identify that return on investment. Maybe you're eliminating injuries, so you're reducing workers' compensation costs. And how can you show that in the end, you're investing some money, but at the end of the day, the reduction in workers' comp ultimately will help to offset the costs of what that investment might be. And so I think that's always very important because numbers speak. And so when you're able to do that, I think that really speaks volumes.
Jay, what have you seen in that area of the ROI?
It's a great lead-in because I spent probably the last month redoing an ROI for safety for our senior executive team just to have in my back pocket. Because you're going to be asked for it at any given point. And what was I pulling together? Anywhere from asking ChatGPT how much an accident costs, just to see what's kind of fun and out there. And then boom, going right to National Safety Council, how much does an accident cost, hidden, direct and indirect costs. And the organizations are actually putting out numbers these days, like the average cost of an accident up front is going to be $40,000, but then multiply it times, you know, 4 to 6, and that's going to be your true cost. And it's becoming more and more prevalent because people are looking for it more and more, and it's much easier for a safety professional, I think, these days to show that value and have that usually immature safety discussion, because if you're getting asked for it, I haven't been asked for it. I'm just getting ready in case somebody asks for it. You know, in an immature safety culture, they're asking you for the return on investment. The mature safety culture is, if I have a great safety program, I'm making a profit. And I just printed out a Harvard Business Review that just came out last week that Charlie printed for me before the podcast here. It's cutting edge on what safety is doing for performance and profit in companies, a big study by the HBR. So I think it's pretty critical to always have that front and center, because inevitably, someone's going to ask as part of your sales pitch.
So wise as a safety professional, you learn to develop it, but wise as a safety professional that says, I might as well get it ready because I'm going to need it at some point.
Because it makes good business sense. If there's no business, there's no us.
But Sandra, some people really get kind of disillusioned, the safety professional, because they will, I got to sell them on this stuff. Well, how would you help those people to get over that hump?
You know, I think you made a good point, right? If you don't make the product, we don't have a job. And so that was one of the things that I've really come to, I think, not necessarily accept, but it's a key component of working in manufacturing or whatever role that you're in. If you're a health and safety professional, you are likely working for an organization that makes widgets. And so if those widgets aren't being made, you might be out of a job. So if someone comes to you and says, you know, we have an issue, we need it to be addressed, and you say, okay, I have this solution, but that solution takes down production or something else, well, then guess what? Widgets aren't being made. So it comes to a point where you have to have conversations with production, quality, engineering, leadership, and you have to be able to make concessions or find ways to work together so that widgets can still be made, but made safely, and that you can continue to make profit so that you can continue to have a job at the end of the day.
Now, it sounds like the word, I don't think you used this word, but it sounds like compromise.
Compromise, yes.
Is taking place.
Yes.
Compromise, not with a capital K, but with a C, mm-hmm. right? And so, Jay, you probably don't like compromise. It's like, do it my way. What do you think?
I think in the evolution of your career, you learn that compromise is critical, C&C. Because earlier on in your career, at least from my vantage point, it's compliance, it's directives, it's rules and procedures. And then you begin to learn that it's not, it's really people, people, people. And I think compromise and exchange theory are very important in business and EHS.
You expand on exchange theory just a bit so we make sure we understand what you're talking about.
Anytime the production, quality, continuous improvement, people, logistics, finance, human resource, anytime they need my help, I'm jumping through a hoop. And that may have nothing to do with safety because that's the behavior I would need from them and that's the behavior they would want from me. And if you can role model those right behaviors and expand your circle of influence, sorry, Covey, you're really going to get influence in the organization.
So I believe what you might be saying is that you can't just always be a taker. You got to be a giver, and life works better when there's giving and taking back and forth.
Yes, but your investment in EHS, you have to be more of a giver to get to take because it's disproportionately not the same in the environment we operate in.
And
that could be a whole nother episode.
Sandra, I'd just like to build on that just a bit, because how much have you had to live a life of give and take in the world of safety?
The my entire career. And it's a lot of give, honestly.
So for everybody's listening that thought I'm going to be just the taker all the time. Hello.
This is a tough, tough business. And what we do, it's a tough career. It's really difficult. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of pressure. But it is the most rewarding career when you get the outcomes you're working so hard to achieve is what I would say.
Absolutely.
So you made this start to turn the ship around where a group of people saw, hey, Sandra got some stuff done to help us. And it really wasn't, I think the way I interpret it really wasn't that the workers had to change that much. The situation changed and made them feel safer and better like that. Was that kind of a starting point then you saw that it progressed from there?
Yeah, absolutely.
How challenging was the safety record at the place? Had they had a lot of challenges, or was it just kind of a once every once in a while kind of situation?
No, there were continuous challenges. It was at that particular facility, the first facility I went to, it was a poor challenge. But then I moved on to some other ones. Hmm.
So how did things progress from there then? What were some other steps after that that you saw to help you in that to continue to get gains?
It was a bargaining unit facility. I worked very closely with their leadership, who was very appreciative of the work that was being done, which makes a big difference in safety when you are, you know, work alongside the leadership, bargaining unit leadership, and the like, because they're very appreciative of that support.
Now, sometimes union facilities can be very adversarial. I mean, they're kind of like we're going to war, us against them. How did you approach that? Let's help the people here that are listening, if they're facing a situation, give them some reminders. What are some things that you might be able to tell us you did that really helped make that environment better?
Well, you know, honestly, when they started to see the changes, right, they saw the interaction I had with engineering and we started to make changes. The leader came to me, the plant leader, and he said, you know, I like the changes that you're making. We've never seen this before. I like the engagement you have. You know, if we come to you with other opportunities, is there, you know, can you work with us on that? I said, absolutely. And so, you know, it was great to have that partnership, have the line of communication. And what was most interesting to me is I left that facility and I went on to another facility, which was governed by the same union. And he came because he was overseeing the region at that time, that same leader. And he came to drop off some pamphlets. And I happened to be coming out of the office and he saw me and he was so excited to see me. And he said, oh my gosh, he said, you know, it's been some time, but I want to, you know, thank you for everything you've done. He said, you know, I hope you're doing great things here. He goes, but I really appreciated you as a safety leader.
Would you attribute that relationship to trust?
Absolutely.
And that was the foundation and the building block of your accomplishments with the union environment?
Trust and communication, that open line of communication. Because you know, like you said, trust. Nothing was hidden. You know, if they had something to bring to me and I was willing to work with them on that and I would come to them if there was any concerns I had, yeah, absolutely.
And then what if you had to say no?
They understood, right? We would work through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair.
Now that's, that's a really sweet relationship. I don't mean that in a saucy way, but it just is when you feel like they trust me and they don't think I'm against them and they really see you as a benefiter to their people. That's really good. And for our folks in union environments.
Like me.
Of course. Jay, how have you dealt with those situations?
They want the same thing you want. And any adversarial relationship is a self-fulfilling prophecy of misinformation and people's opinions. At the root of everything you're trying to accomplish, correct me if I'm wrong or add on to this, please, Sandra, they want the same thing we want, which is to go home at the end of the day, be with their loved ones, provide for their loved ones, work hard. And anything that says it's adversarial or talking about it is noise. And as a safety professional, you can be blinded by that rhetoric if you're not careful. But at the end of the day, from a safety and health perspective, environmental perspective, Sandra, wouldn't you agree that they want the same thing we want?
Absolutely. And I think that's where... you know, speaking of, you know, the safety cop persona, that's where it's not successful. You know, if you come in and you're immediately adversarial, because that's how that appears, you're not going to be able to create a relationship. But if you come in as a partner and tell people, here, I'm here to support you and make this program successful.
Now, there's a couple Carnegie principles. One is that idea of begin in a friendly way. You start out with not, hey, I'm here to bust your chops. You start in a friendly way to work with that. You do make the other person feel important, and you do it with sincerity. And having worked for many years with union workers and their leaders, those leaders are held responsible by their people to help get good things for them. So when the safety professional can rise to the occasion and say, let's get these resources here that we need as best we can and help, it makes the union leadership be known to, hey, they're getting stuff done. And that's a win for everybody. Plus, you took the initiative. You didn't wait for them to come to you. You took the initiative to say, hey, we got this stuff done. What can we do to help?
100%. A shout out to the United Steelworkers that I work with every day that want the same thing and work incredibly hard and do incredibly tough things all the time to achieve the same things we want to achieve. And when you're in the trenches like Sandra is here and I am at EHS, when you're right there with them, they're going to perform. And when there's an incident, they're going to help you make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, okay. So what kind of things did you do at that newer place to start to try to earn the trust, earn the confidence? Again, different situation, different everything. But what were some things? Because I believe this would help the folks to get some tangible ideas of what you did.
Again, a lot of interaction. I spent a lot of time on the shop floor. Didn't spend much time in the office unless I was filling out reports.
How do you do that? How do you break out of that administrative toughness of EHS to get out on the floor when you know that's the right thing to do? But was it longer hours? Was it more time with people? And hey, this is more important than this administrative burden. How did you balance that?
Yeah, I mean, safety is not eight to five.
No,
it just isn't. And so, you know, I'd come in the morning, I'd check my email just to make sure there wasn't anything pressing that I needed to address, and then I would head out to the floor because there were people that, you know, needed to be talked to, or I would just walk and just make sure there wasn't anything going on in particular. And then, you know, say my highs, hellos, and introductions and things like that.
When you would walk through a plant, were you able to talk to people by name and know things about them?
Yes.
Have you ever experienced where you walk through a plant with somebody else and they couldn't do that as a leader? And what describe to the audience what that feeling is like and why it's not good?
I think safety, the key to safety is having that interaction and that personal relationship with people. And so when they trust you, again, it goes back to trust, that interpersonal relationship, they feel more comfortable coming to you with concerns. And so when you walk the floor with a safety professional, especially, and they don't know the people or they're not making eye contact with the people, number one, you're wondering, have you ever left your office?
Yeah.
And number two, do you even know what's happening out here?
Yes.
Right.
And I can give you examples. So
please give us one.
There was a facility I worked at not long ago, and actually the company. And so my facility actually had the worst injury rate in the company. And there were other facilities within the company that were doing okay, but they were not within the same business unit. And as my facility started to improve on its safety record, they had asked me to visit these other sites. And I would go out to these other sites and the employees would be like, wow, you're out on the shop floor. You know, and I wish I
somebody
want you.
Somebody got busted,
yeah.
Right? Because now you know.
Right. And I want you to be my safety person. And I at both sites.
Yeah.
You know, and it was because you realize, okay, people aren't leaving their office. And so you realize that was why there were challenges at these other facilities, mm-hmm. because there wasn't that interaction and that observation by these other professionals.
And I am not trying to be mean to the listeners here, but why do people not want to leave their office? I spent most of my life in HR and we always had to push HR people to get out. What's one reason?
The demands of the business above you.
Hmm.
So in any given day, I need you to report out on these metrics once a month. Now I need to consolidate the metrics. If you've ever sat down to what an EHS professional is responsible for from a total metric standpoint, including sustainability, you could probably doing data keystrokes of, I don't know, anywhere from 500 to 1,000 a month. And so above you is this incredible stress not to go out on the floor, but it's not really real. It's self-imposed. And then so I think you're distracted by what's above you and forget what's below you and what's important to drive your culture or wherever you're trying to do it. This profession has an incredible amount of public reporting and almost an insurmountable administrative burden on top of what we're required to do.
Okay. So that's
one.
What's another one that comes to your mind, Sandra? Do you anything else? What keeps people from getting out on the floor?
Well, I will tell you that when I first started in safety, I was not a people person. So my public speaking skills were nil. So when I had to do training, I was just a deer in headlights, standing in front of the room, speaking as fast as possible. And it was scary. So I think people get into safety because they like the field, but a lot of them are introverts. So the idea that they have to go out and interact with people could be scary.
Yes, go ahead.
The next one I would give you to build off of that, so is there's do you have the people skills? What's above you driving you into the office? And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't say your own discipline. Your own self, what's keeping you in there, knowing if you know the right thing to be out there, what, you know, there's a disciplined approach to.
And that's one of the things that we teach in the Dale Carnegie course is how do you learn to have a conversation with people? We teach something called the big yellow house, and it's a word pictures that help you realize the things you can talk to people about. Because many times I found that not just safety professionals, but a lot of folks are just, well, I'm out there, but what do I say to these people? But you have we teach a repertoire of things you can talk to them about. Well, where are you from? Hey, tell me a little about your family. What kind of pets you got? What are you doing for the weekend? Going on a trip, vacation this summer? Several other things. And when people can learn the power of that small talk, the power of just chatting to find out about them, that's where the trust and then openness comes. So the only time you go out there is not just when you got a problem, but you're interested in them as a person. It goes a long, long ways. And so I know for folks that are listeners, it's a habit. You kind of get stuck in the office and you justify why you got to stay, and it's hard because you got that pressure screaming at you to get those reports done. But you got to take care of the people. And you learn to do that. How? How'd you learn to do that?
I think over time I realized that I truly am a people person. Mm-hmm. And so I just made it a point, especially once I became a leader in a leadership role, that it was very important to introduce myself as a leader and then act like a leader. Right?
That's a novel idea, yes.
Yeah.
Acting like a leader. Give us some more on that. Yeah. That's what would you do to bring more leadership presence to what you were doing as an EHS professional?
Well, I think the key is, you know, being present, you know, speaking with employees, listening to employees. I would have meetings. I would take their input and then, you know, speak on their behalf when – you know, there were opportunities. And, you know, if things weren't working, you know, again, open communication is key. And so those were the types of things that I found very important as a leader to, you know, earn trust and then create relationships.
And do I remember that you had a reputation so much that they gave you a particular name that it was a name of honor?
Yes.
And respect.
Yes.
Which was?
Safety Sandy.
And how'd that come about?
Well, I was working at a facility, and again, this was the facility with the poor safety performance. And when I came in, it was very much safety does safety. And they had two shifts. I was there on first shift. And so when I left, that there was obviously no safety, right? Because I was the one in charge of safety. And so it took me quite a while to start to break some of the habits there because their terminology was, it's always been done this way, right? So we'll just keep doing it that way. And I spent a lot of time breaking down those barriers. And one day I had been up front talking to HR. I came back to my office and it was that second shift time. And there was a note on my desk that was written by an individual that had worked, that was working on one of our pieces of equipment. And it said,
you knew this name of this, when you saw the yes, name, you knew the person.
I knew exactly who it was because I knew her machine. And it said, "Safety Sandy, come see me." And that was it. Like, that was the first time I had ever been called that. She just wrote it on that piece of paper. And so I took that and I cut it and I cut out the Safety Sandy and I stuck it on my door.
That was it.
And that was it. And awesome. Forever called Safety Sandy.
Why, do you think that disarms people and their motivations when they know they can address you as Safety Sandy? Like, there's an implied trust that you've been talking about, and an implied trust of intent and trust of character that comes along with a nickname that sticks like that, and no resistance from you, right?
Don't call me that. No, don't.
The moment you do that,
you're toast.
You're toast. Yeah, you're right. But you didn't do that, and you're very proud of that.
Yeah, and she did it. I knew she did it in an endearing way. She didn't do it to be malicious.
Right.
She did it because she's like, you know, she really is about safety. Like, she really cares. So I'm like, Safety Sandy. And then everybody picked up on it. And that's what it was thereafter.
And what did that do to your heart and your soul when that was going on?
Oh, I was so happy because I wasn't sure where I was and where I stood with that workforce. You know, it'd been several years and I just felt like I was climbing this ladder that I was never going to reach the top. And then that happened and I thought, okay, well, at least I got through to her.
Several years? How many years would you say?
Almost three.
Well, now that's a pretty heavy load to wonder, am I getting through? Am I getting through? Am I getting through? And fortunately, you didn't give up with it. Fortunately, you stayed at it and kept being persistent and kept being yourself, of working to be open. And did you see that to be a turning point?
I did.
Talk to us, would you, a bit about emotions that safety professionals have to deal with along the way, because there are a variety that you have to do. Remember the old wide world of sports? Sandy, were you around when they had Wild
I
the
sure
sports?
Do. The thrill of victory
and the
agony of defeat.
Yeah, yeah. Dun, 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 dun. The guy going off the ski slope.
Ski slope.
And all. Talk to us a little bit about that, would you?
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest, you know, emotion that I always dealt with was invalidation. Mm-hmm. You know, I was always so proud of what I was doing. You know, safety. Again, like, it was my persona, right? Safety Sandy, very passionate, like what I was doing. I was always out there, you know. And then there would be those days when I just felt invalidated by my peers who, you know, well, that's not important. We're not going to do that, you know, and they kind of dismiss you. And so you just kind of feel down. But you know deep down, it's still very important. Mm. And what you're doing matters. So you have to learn to overcome that. And so that's something that I've learned to work through again. And not taking things personal, right? Because again, it felt like it was part of my persona. Hmm. And so when somebody dismisses something or you don't get, to implement that project that you wanted, it's like, okay, it's not personal, right? But it's a business decision. So, those are the types of things where you have to learn how to manage that and then find, your next opportunity to then move on to and go from there.
It sounds like somebody in baseball that strikes out or the pitcher throws a bad pitch or a walk and you have to be able to bounce back from it. And that's key to, because what we do is an emotional thing, because you're putting your heart, your soul, you want well-being for people, and yet you still got to guide these people who are making their choices. Sandra, as we're kind of winding down, what are just some final thoughts that you have that you'd like for people from your life experiences, lessons you learned from your experiences, to sum it up that could be of a help to people?
It's a great question. I think what is most important in the health and safety field is that it is a roller coaster. Absolutely a roller coaster. You're going to have the fantastic day. But the one thing about it is that that's what makes it so exciting. Not one day is the same. Mm-hmm. It's just not, it's not monotonous. There's, you know, there's always something different. But you will have the downs of injuries or incidents that happen where, you know, you feel like you've not necessarily failed, but something happened and you probably could have done better. But then you'll have successes where you'll see that an employee recognized something and they'll come to you and they'll have a conversation with you and you'll say, okay, I got through to them. And then you're just on this high. And then the next day, something's different. And then, so there's just this constant roller coaster of emotions. But it's a very exciting career. It's very rewarding. And it's just amazing to be able to go to work every day and know that you're making a difference
yes.
in someone's life. And that's why I do it.
And how much is it that when those emotions, the roller coaster is crashing down like that, you have to remind yourself, hang on. At some point, it's going to go back up again. And when you get up there on that height, the heights, enjoy it while it lasts. But it's that way. But it's going to come back because you're there to serve other people. Thank you very much for coming on and telling your story to all these folks that listen to the podcast so it can be a help and a benefit to them.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sandra.
In Sandra's talk, one of the things I wrote down here is breaking down barriers. You hit walls, you got to work, break them down, break them down, break them down.
I heard get out on the floor and know your people.
But you're there because you're interested in them, and that opens them up.
100%.
Great stuff.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP. With your hosts, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman and Jay Harf, Vice President of Global Environment Health Safety and Sustainability at Xylem. Executive produced by Charlie Eltringham. The supervising producer is Joel Bergai. Directed by Jiachi Liu. Edited by Jared Griot and Kyla Anderson. Editorial support from Brandon Moha. Social media support from Braylon Morgan and Evelyn Baku. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you would like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.